So we'll move on to our first speaker today. We have a bit of an entree presentation today, and it's from Elizabeth, our Queensland PSO. Are you there, Elizabeth?
Yes, I am, Tim. Thank you very much. And welcome again, everyone. I'm going to start today by asking you to paint a picture in your mind, a picture with where there's a place and where you've got people in that picture. It's somewhere where you like to be, where you feel happy, safe, comfortable, and connected. Now I want you to see that picture when something destroys and ruins that safe, happy, comfortable feeling that you had. Something has changed. Someone in your place has said or done something that changes things for you, that's destroyed the good feelings that you had. That happy, safe, comfortable, connected feeling is now ruined. How do you feel? And just imagine you're a child. How do you feel? What emotions do you have now? Can you talk about it? Do you want to talk about it? Who will you talk to? Do you want to return to that place? Do you feel you'll ever be able to return there? If not, would you like to find another place? Similar, where you had those good feelings. Would you even want to try? You might know why I'm asking you to think about these things. Our church spaces should be places where people like to be, where they feel happy, safe, comfortable, and connected. And this should be for all people, regardless of their age, their background, who they are. Consider the awful dilemma that someone faces, whether that's an adult or a child, when in the place they trusted, their church, they suffered abuse and severe emotional trauma. They've been hurt by their church, the place they trusted to keep them safe. How do they feel? How do they cope when that trust has been broken? The Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse told us, or rather the harrowing stories of those brave enough to tell their story, told us that institutions, including churches, including the LCA, are responsible for the devastating pain of children hurt in their spaces. Institutions were blamed for many cases of lives ruined or destroyed because someone in that institution, in that place, in that church, ruined the happy, safe, comfortable, and connected place that it should have been. And our church, the LCA, is responsible for some of that devastating pain, for those lives who've been destroyed, for those who feel destroyed, and for those who feel ruined. Some of that abuse happened long ago, but some is much more recent. But the pain and suffering do not only belong in the past. The impact of that abuse can last a lifetime, can ruin a life, can destroy a family, can shatter a community. The abuser, the perpetrator, may be no more, but that does not end the pain and the suffering for the victim, the survivor. Our church is working to ensure that people are aware of the damaging, devastating effects of abusive and harmful behaviour. We have our standards of ethical behaviour. If you've not read this brochure lately, please make time to read and reflect on what it says to you. And we have our Safe Church training. If you've not committed to that training, please make that a priority. Here in Queensland, in response to the report to the Royal Commission, the Criminal Code is in the process of being amended to include new offences for failure to protect and failure to report offences of a sexual nature committed in relation to a child. We've heard about the National Principles for Child Safe Organisations. These principles reflect the standards recommended by the Royal Commission. And isn't it great? In February 2019, all members of COAG, the Council of Australian Governments, endorsed these principles. Our church is preparing a document that translates these principles into meaningful statements for congregational use. We will have our own LCA child safety standards for congregations. And why are we doing this? Because through our words, our actions, and in our activities and programs, we want to show God's love. We want to ensure the safety of all, especially children. And because we will be required to report on how we're working to embed these principles, these standards, into the culture, into our practice, into the life of our church. You'll learn more about this today. And I pray when you leave the webinar that you'll feel energized, supported, and equipped to return to your congregation and to talk about this and to embrace it and implement it. Not just because we have to, but because we really want to. Thank you.
Absolutely, Elizabeth. I couldn't agree more. Wonderful introduction there and leading nicely into the main event presentation from our church's Child Protection Project Officer. Hopefully she's somewhat familiar to you all these days. And Marianne, welcome. And I believe you're going to talk to us about the new child safety standards for congregations for our church. Is that right?
That's right. Thank you very much, Tim. And thank you, Elizabeth, for that excellent introduction that really segues well into a lot of the things that I want to talk to you all about today. Before I start, though, for those of you that might have seen any of my previous presentations to members of the LCA, I want you to just remember for a moment to extend a little bit of what Elizabeth just said about what it's like to be a child. It's really important that when we think about and when we're making decisions about what's right for children, that we remember what it was like to be a child. And in that sense, remember that it was wonderful and joyous, full of freedoms and excitements and minimal responsibilities. But it was also, if you remember, full of uncertainty, instability, and sometimes fear. Children don't know how to make decisions. And we've got to remember they can't make judgments like we can. They're not adults. Children need us to help them make safe decisions, and they need us to help them be safe. So please don't forget that for the duration of this presentation. And when you go back into your congregations, please don't forget that when you're undertaking your respective roles within your congregations. Our purpose today, or my purpose today, is to outline to you an important new child safety initiative within the LCA. It's an initiative that will have significant implications for congregations, including chairpersons and pastors. Now, I have to say from the poll, I'm just delighted to see that we've got 36 pastors here listening and 78 council members, some of whom I imagine are chairpersons. That's fantastic. And thank you for being there. I really appreciate that. Part of our purpose today is to really emphasise the roles that church councils need to start taking more in relation to child safety. Before I talk to you about the LCA child safety standards for congregations, I do just want to give you a little bit of a context. I want you to understand why this is so important and why this is necessary. I'm going to be repeating a little bit of what Elizabeth said, but I think it's important that you hear it. In terms of the background and context to the development of these standards, you would all remember the Royal Commission. The majority of cases that were heard in the Royal Commission, of the 8,000 survivors, around 70% were from faith-based institutions, and a lot of those from churches. We heard, as Elizabeth said, some pretty harrowing survivor accounts. We also heard Elizabeth talk about the terrible paradox of being abused within the institution that is supposed to be your safest place and what that does to trust for children. It's an utter betrayal, and in some ways it's an utter slaughtering of trust for children. And as Elizabeth said, it's something that stays for a very, very long time with children well into their adulthood, long after the abuse is finished and sometimes long after they've had any contact with the perpetrators. So what the Royal Commission told us, and it's important that we must remember this, that churches are not always safe places for children. In fact, churches are sometimes very vulnerable. Churches are vulnerable as good, soft targets for perpetrators and people who want to target children and groom children for their own benefit. It's also really important to emphasise that the Lutheran Church was not exempt in any of this process in relation to the Royal Commission. We had quite a few cases, quite a few survivors who came to the Royal Commission to talk about what had happened to them within the Lutheran Church. Not all of those were very historical. A lot of people say to me, oh, but Marianne, the Lutheran Church is fine. Most of this terrible abuse was happening within the Catholic Church or within the Anglican Church. It is a very, very big mistake and a dangerous mistake for us to think that it's not a problem for us as well. We did have a number of cases, as I said. I want you also to remember that we have a regular stream of concerns coming through to our professional standards department. Disclosures of child abuse, either historically or relatively recently, reports of inappropriate or disturbing behaviours, they come through regularly. So I really want people to remember that this isn't a problem that exists elsewhere from our church. It is a problem we must confront, and it is a problem and an issue that we must try and do better with. I think it's also important for you not to think this isn't something that could happen in my congregation. It's a little bit like the way people think bad things will never happen to me. That's the sort of thing that happens to everyone else. It's not a good position for us to take, particularly given we're working in congregations. It is something that could happen in your congregation. It could happen very easily within your congregation. It's not something for you to think belongs elsewhere for everybody else to worry about. The other thing to bear in mind is that we don't know how many other historical cases might be out there awaiting notification. Remember, the redress scheme is open for at least another 6 years. We don't know what's lurking in the woodwork. There may be a whole lot of other cases out there that we don't yet know about that we have to deal with, that we need to be considerate of. So what this means for us is that what we want to talk to you about today, in relation to the Royal Commission made two major recommendations. The first one was that they developed 10 national principles for child-safe organisations. These were developed following survivor accounts, case studies, consultation with experts in the sector and in universities, lots of research. They did a lot of research papers. And as Elizabeth said, these national principles were endorsed by COAG in February 2019. That's really significant. That means that all of our jurisdictions, all of our states and territories have signed up to them. The second thing, major recommendation that's really relevant to our development of our child safety standards is that the Royal Commission recommended that those 10 national principles be mandatory for all organisations delivering services in some way for children, and that they be regulated by government. Now that, of course, includes faith-based organisations and, of course, includes churches, and that regulation occurs against the national principles and all of the indicators that are contained in them. Now that's really significant because in the past, we as churches have not been heavily regulated in relation to child safety issues, more so in relation to things like working with children checks, and that's really, really only about it. So it's important that we remember that faith-based organisations and churches are going to be regulated in each jurisdiction. If you're in New South Wales, it's already happening. The Office of the Children's Guardian has just started a process of regulating 45,000 organisations in New South Wales in relation to how well they're meeting these principles. In Victoria, you've had a regulatory program underway now for about 4 or 5 years. The ACT is about to embark upon one. Tasmania, I believe, are consulting. And we have no doubts, given the COAG commitment, that all of our other jurisdictions will be signing up. The other reason why we have gone ahead and developed these child safety standards for congregations, it's consistent with us furthering our long-standing commitment to child safety in the LCA. Now, you know about this commitment for those of you that attended synods in 2015 and 2018, or for those of you who have followed the resolutions that come out of Synod, significant resolutions were made during both of those synods in relation to protecting children from all forms of abuse. We changed the object of the constitution of the church to ensure it contains statements regarding the protection of children from all forms of abuse. They also talk about children being, about resources being provided, and that children and of children being a precious gift from God who need to be protected. We've also, in terms of our longstanding commitment, we have things like our professional standards department, which of course we've had now for a very long time. We've been delivering safe church training and working at it and remodeling it and improving it now for a very long time. And we do have rigorous screening practices in place. We are doing very well. We're actually quite a fair way down the track from lots of other organisations. The other reason, and probably the most important reason, why we've gone ahead in looking at putting these child safety standards in place in the LCA is because children are our most treasurable resource. They are a precious gift from God. The Bible and Jesus teach us to care and protect for them. We must. It is incumbent upon us to do everything we can to nurture them in their faith, to help them grow as they worship God, and to always keep them safe from harm. So, yes, we have these mandatory principles, 10 principles that have been set up. COAG has signed up to them. We are, what that means, if you understand regulation, it means we are going to be questioned and tested and monitored in terms of how well we implement those 10 principles. So that means we have to find a way now to put them into practice that works for our congregations, a way that's meaningful and helpful. And a way that's not just a process of mere compliance. If you've heard me talk before, I've always said to you that any process that you view as being just a process of mere compliance, it won't work. There's no point in having it. It's simply not effective. All it does actually is make people feel resistant and resentful and sometimes very unhappy and not like the topic. How anyone can not like the topic or want to embrace the topic of treasuring our children, I don't know. And so what I'm saying to you is we need you, particularly those of you who are working in church councils, those of you who are pastors, and those of you who are working in coordinator type roles, we really need you to embrace these new standards that we've written. So if I then move on to our next slide, just trying to find my version of the slide here, sorry, folks. So what we've done is we've written the LCA child safety standards for congregations. We have basically, what we've done is we have interpreted the 10 national principles for child safe organisations and put them into our own LCA child safety standards. Now, the reason we've done, they're heavily reflective of the national principles, but the reason we've written our own is that we wanted some standards or principles, but we're calling them standards, that are tailored to a faith-based and congregational context. We want them to be meaningful to you in a congregational context. We've also written them in a way that's much more straightforward and user-friendly than the various tools that are available for implementing the national principles. The tools that we've written for you that I'm going to briefly show you this afternoon are much more straightforward and much more user-friendly and much less dense. We've also developed these because we need them to fit with our volunteer demographic. We know that most of you out there who will be trying to implement standards such as these, and those of you out there who are working in this area in our congregations, are mostly and often volunteers. And in that sense, we're really aware of finding that balance, that very difficult balance between helping our volunteers, but also not and asking of our volunteers, but also not placing too much of a burden upon them. It's a very difficult balance to find. For that reason, we've written the standards in a way that we hope is going to be as straightforward, as easy to implement as possible. There's lots of very straightforward instructions in them. We've also written them in a way that's quite joyful and happy because we want it to reflect that it's about children and that this is actually about helping children to be safe in our congregations, which is a positive and happy thing. We've moved away from the bureaucratic speak that you find in a lot of other papers in relation to this stuff. I need to tell you that the LCA Child Safety Standards for Congregations will be mandatory in 2022 for all congregations. We will be trialling them here in South Australia in 2021 over the next few months in about six congregations that we're hoping will agree to be involved. We'll also be conducting a targeted consultation in relation to these child safety standards during the next 3 months as well. The papers will all come up on your various district websites over the next few days, well, over the next week, to be fair. They are scheduled, as I said, for church-wide implementation in Australia in 2022. In relation to New Zealand, if there's anyone there from New Zealand, we are soon to start conversations with your leadership. If we do implement these in New Zealand, we'll write some standards that are better tailored to the New Zealand context. So they'll be similar, but slightly different. Okay. The other thing I do want to also say to you before I just go any further is that today I'm going to move through these quite quickly. I cannot possibly give you an overview of everything in relation to the standards and everything in relation to the two tools. It is going to be quite brief and quite quick. Today is just to give you that overview. I would really suggest that you get up online next week once the papers are available and have a good read, explore them further. The consultation process, as I said, is targeted, but if you want to feed information to us and to me in relation to the questions that are in the consultation package, or you have any particular views or concerns, we really want to hear them. The other thing is that these standards won't implement themselves. You will really need to educate yourselves about them between now and next year. So exploration around them as much as possible would be just so helpful for you. So what I want to say to you is that these standards are really going to meet a dual purpose. They're going to help to keep our children safe within our congregations, and they're also going to help us meet our regulatory requirements. I think there's an added bonus to it all. And for those of you who've heard me talk before, you've probably heard me say this. I really believe that if we create an environment in our congregations where we really focus on our children, we really work hard to put ourselves in their shoes and develop a sense of what being in church feels like for them, whether they're 3 years old, 2 years old, 10 years old, 15 years old. What does it feel like for them? Do they feel genuinely part of the congregation, connected, respected, and comfortable? Or are they just there as sort of like the offspring of their parents who are really the ones that are connected in the church? I believe if you really connect with them, you really help them to feel comfortable. And if they're safe and happy, they're much more likely to speak up if there's something, research tells us, if there's something going wrong for them and they're concerned. If they're safe and happy, connected, respected, and comfortable, they will speak up. But also, those children are much more likely to continue their faith and continue worshipping with you in your congregation into their young adulthood and beyond. So this means that as we nurture our children and keep them safe, I think we also help to grow our congregations. And that's something that's so important to us at this time. I just want to finish this little bit by saying to you, I think we have three really important reasons for implementing standards such as these and taking our child protection roles really seriously and pursuing and getting even better at it than we have been in the past. One is a moral and ethical obligation. It is the right thing to do. We do want all children to be safe and protected. Secondly, we now have a legal responsibility. We are going to be regulated. It will be a requirement by law in all states, already is in quite a few. There's also a theological basis to this. The Bible teaches us to protect the vulnerable. Remember, the Bible talks about children being under divine protection, talks about God's people must protect the vulnerable. I think that's in Isaiah. But so does Jesus. He teaches us about being, if we want to be truly great, we need to become like children. I sort of think that Jesus is telling us that about this, trying to teach us about the special value of children, that special fragility and that special vulnerability that they have, when he says, let the children come unto me and do not hinder them. So look, these are our standards, which will come up on the next screen. That's also a file that you've got shared for you, and you can find it in chat. As I said to you, we wanted to present them in a way that's joyful and happy. We don't want this to be black and white and very much just viewed as being something about compliance, as I said before. Now, I'm going to really, really quickly just give you an overview of the standards, all right? I'm not going to go into them in a lot of detail. I can't, because we just don't have the time to do that. So standard one is here. Child safety is embedded in our culture, leadership and governance. It's prioritised and demonstrated at all levels of leadership. Our congregation has a zero tolerance for child abuse. Now, when this is the standard that we've written, there's the LCA's first standard in relation to children. It's heavily reflective of what the National Principles first standard is. We've just simplified the language a little bit. There are a number of indicators that we've written that sit under each standard. And for example, in standard one, it's those four, that you've got a commitment to child safety displayed somewhere in the church and it's really communicated. All members display appropriate behaviours whenever they're interacting with children, like they don't get into full body hugs and they're not unnecessarily getting kids to sit on their laps, you know, all those sorts of things. They talk to children with respect, etc. Leaders regularly communicate important messages about child safety, and child safety is embraced by leadership and is in prioritising congregational decision making. And that might be, for example, when there's a person of concern notification that comes into your congregation. Now, so what we're saying, I'm just going to dwell on standard one a bit, just so you get the sense of what our standards look like. If we just go back one slide, Dave, to that one about child safety being embedded in our culture and leadership, that's our statement about child safety in standard one. Culture, leadership and governance. Child safety is embedded in that. That's about creating a child safe culture in your leadership. I've had a lot of experience working with different organisations of different sizes and different types. And in relation to child safety, my experience very much tells me, and so does a lot of the research and literature, that if your leadership is not on board with this stuff, it won't work. You won't actually create much of a change in relation to how people view things like child safety. So you've got that statement. And then if we just go to the next slide again, Dave, those four dot points there are what we call the indicators or the key action areas, or we've said how we show this. Now, they're the four things that you will be measured against in our assessment process around how you're going. They're the four things you have to try and fulfill. Remember, these are minimum standards. You can go well beyond them if you want to, please do. The second standard is about valuing, respecting and listening to children. We take the views of children seriously. We are committed to listening to children, also providing them opportunities to participate. Children can raise concerns if they're worried about something. That's a lot of that stuff I talked to you before about when I said this helps to grow your congregation if you've got safe, happy, comfortable, connected children. So if you look at standard two, these are the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 dot points or indicators that we will be measuring in each congregation. How well are children acknowledged? Are their voices listened to? We value the opinions of children. How well are they valued? Friendships is really important. Do we talk to children about risk and safety? Do we display child-friendly information about it? Standard three, for example, children, this is all about just including families, working in partnership with families, making sure we keep families informed, working together with them to keep our children safe. Then you'll see under working, including families, this is all will be available next week on your website. You'll be able to find all of the standards with all of this information in there. How you show this in terms of families, you talk to them about their children's well-being. We keep parents informed. We remind parents regularly they can raise concerns with us. We invite parents to contribute, et cetera. We seek feedback from them. Standard four is quite a big one. It spans two slides in this presentation. This is about acknowledging that children with unique vulnerabilities from different diverse backgrounds are much, much more likely to be abused. And they are children, if we go to the next slide, they are children who from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander backgrounds, children with disabilities, including children on the spectrum in relation to autism and Asperger's, et cetera, children from refugee and migrant type backgrounds, and children who have physical disabilities as well. I haven't forgotten any children in that one. And children who can't live with their families, for example, children who are in foster care or children who are living in residential care or children who've been removed from their families for child protection purposes, they're all much more likely to be abused. We have to be much more open and aware of their needs, we've also got to help them feel safe and protected when they come to us. Standard five, you know all about. This is standard five. It's about our all of our workers, and workers, bear in mind, means volunteers as well as employees, as well as pastors, that all of our workers are suitable and safe. Now, that's your working with children check screening stuff, but it's also about how well you actually recruit and screen when you're recruiting somebody into a role. And also, how well are your workers supported in their roles, which is a big issue for us because I don't think we do that very well for our volunteers. And then those are the dot points about how we show this. I'll leave you to read those yourselves when the papers come up. Standard six is about having a reporting and complaints system that's child focused. I certainly think we do have that. These are all the dot points that you would be expected to meet. I'm going to whip through them because I know we're going to get short of time. Standard seven is about our people understand child safety. Now, guess what? That's all about our training, the very good Safe Church training that you do. I did notice that 32 people weren't sure when your congregation last had a Safe Church training. So as Tim said, get in touch, get one going. A lot of these standards have all been integrated into the training, so it's important. And I think about 27 people said that they hadn't had one for more than 3 years. Get in touch, get one sorted. I think it's really important, particularly given what's happening next year. Fantastic that so many had their training in the past 12 months or in the past 3 years. And this is that there are the three dot points that you'll be required to see whether you can meet. And standard eight is about risk management. Now, I think we do this in varying degrees of quite well through to not very well at all. And it's an area that we need to be really rigorous about and work very hard around children to make sure we do it very well. There's a whole lot of dot points, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that we would be, next year we'll be measuring how well you do that. Standard nine is really one that's more for at the district level. It's about having the church having clear policies and procedures about child safety. However, you might have some various different guidelines that sit underneath some of our policies and procedures that are specific only to your congregation, in which case they're relevant and they need to be looked at. There are three dot points that we will be measuring in terms of how well you do it next year in relation to that one. Now, standard 10 is a nice straightforward one. It's just about making sure that you regularly review your progress in relation to these standards. That means probably, I would think, my best recommendation to you would be to have child safety as a standing agenda item at all church council meetings. And also there'll be various requirements in this new model for ensuring that you review your progress in relation to meeting these standards on a regular, maybe quarterly basis within your church councils. And that's the four dot points there, which sort of go on to reflect that. Now, I'm going to stop there. I've probably talked too long. I did know that the introduction to all of this stuff was going to be a bit longer. My next two segments, I'm going to talk to you a bit about how we go about the assessment and a little bit about how we actually prepare really good child safety plans for each of our congregations. And I think now we move over to Elizabeth to see whether there's any questions that have come through in relation to that.
Thanks very much, Marianne. Yes, there is a question. This is probably more a clarification than a real question, but there's a little bit of confusion. So people have heard of in our training and our Safe Church training of the Royal Commission, and they've heard about the National Principles for Child Safe Organisations. And we know that in different states, there's different requirements. So in Queensland, organisations that have children are required to have a child and youth risk management strategy in place, for instance. Mm-hmm. So the query is, and now we've got our standards for our church, what should my congregation focus on to ensure that it is compliant? Do we need to do all of those, or where do we go?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. Thank you for that, Elizabeth. I'm not sure where it came from, but it's great. Look, basically what we've done is we've translated the national principles into the LCA child safety standards. Our view is that you will meet the minimum requirements of the national child safety principles by meeting the minimum requirements of the LCA child safety standards, okay? Now, all of that stems from the Royal Commission findings and recommendations. Things like Queensland having a requirement to have a child and youth risk management plan is fantastic because that fits automatically in our standard in relation to risk management, which I briefly, sorry, but went very quickly through for you before, which is standard 8. So yes, you will, if you're in Queensland, yes, you will need to be still completing those, but that's all a part of meeting standard 8, if that makes sense. I would just want to emphasise again, though, that the national principles and the LCA child safety standards, which heavily reflect the national principles, are just in a much more straightforward way. And again, as I said, they're written for the congregational faith-based context, but they're only minimum standards. So I would envisage that you might have a read through all of these and say, oh, wow, we're doing most of this. This is fantastic. That's great. That means that now you'll have a way of recording it and reporting on it up the line, which I'll talk a bit more about in a minute. But also it then means that if you feel like you're doing most of it, get better. Have a look a little bit further, start exploring, ring me. We can have a look at other things that you might want to add to challenge yourselves more or improve even more. So I hope that answers that question, Elizabeth.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Marianne. Now we're going to just have a look at a few quotes just to focus us, to remind us why we're doing all of this work. So here's a great quote, and it's from a survivor of abuse. When we encounter trauma, we most often search for God. But what happens when trauma occurs in the church? Sexual abuse in the church is a desecration, a violation of the most sacred role and relationship, a trauma leaving emotional and spiritual blinders. It kills the spirit. It is evil of the highest order. It is a children's Sunday school answer to say that sin is the cause and superficial at best. The cause is our culture of casual indifference to predatory sexual behaviour. This indifference is the expressionless face of denial and silence. And this is from someone in the US, and I just thought it was such a powerful statement about the spiritual impact of when someone seeks Jesus and instead they happen upon the horrors of abuse and then they're re-abused when they raise it and the matter's just swept under the carpet. And we've got to be really careful in the church looking at an offender and saying, well, that person's made a mistake and they've sinned and now they're repented and they're forgiven and that's great. I think just to say that is just so naive and reckless and simplistic, and really I think God needs us to do better than that. Now, on the theme of forgiveness, I believe Dave has a quote there for us.
This quote is from the Anglican Archbishop Glenn Davies. He said, "Forgiveness is corrupted when there's no restitution, when there's no true repentance." And I think that what has happened in the past, that there has been easy forgiveness, or shall I say cheap forgiveness, whereby a person has been forgiven thinking it's not going to happen again. We too easily forgave. I think, at heart, most people didn't believe such behaviour could be engaged in a church environment. Even as forgiven sinners, we need to hold each other accountable for our behaviour, to live a life of faith, active in love, as our standards, the standards of ethical behaviour say, because we know that at some time our sinful nature will get in the way. Back to you, Tim.
That's right. That's right. I think there can be too much cheap grace at times. Someone may very well be forgiven by God, but it doesn't mean that we have to trust them. And it certainly doesn't mean that we have to give them free rein to do whatever they want in our church spaces. Now, here's a quote that all of you should be very familiar with from the Gospel according to John, chapter 1, verse 5. "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." And I think there is such darkness for survivors in our church who've been abused and then re-abused as I've said, such darkness, such evil. And this verse from the Bible, of course, is referring to God through the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit being the light of our world. But I do think that when a survivor discloses or reports abuse, they are shining a light in that darkness, and God is working through them. It is such a courageous thing for them to do. We need to support them, and it's a very godly thing for a survivor to do when they come forward.